1 year ago this week, China imposed a sweeping national security law on Hong Kong that criminalized protest and curbed the city's long-cherished semi-autonomy from the mainland. Critics called it the end of Hong Kong when it passed, and some of their dire predictions have come true. Police have arrested protesters, journalists, and pro-democracy lawmakers. And last week, under government pressure, the popular Apple Daily newspaper published its final issue. Louisa Lim is a senior lecturer in journalism at the University of Melbourne and host of the Little Red Podcast. She joins us now. Louisa, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And I want to start with this news about Apple Daily. Last week, the newspaper published its final issue and sold more than a million copies on its last day. What did the paper mean to the city?
Apple Daily was, in many ways, not just a newspaper, but kind of like an institution, I'd say, for the city. It was the last pro-democracy newspaper that existed. It was set up 26 years ago by its founder, Jimmy Lai, who was a clothing tycoon. And its mission had always been to be quite explicitly pro-democracy. You know, when there were marches calling for democracy, Apple would have kind of front page, full front pages calling for people to go out. It would include placards for people to wave at the marches. And it would run stories that were very critical of China. I mean, sometimes it was very kind of racy and had quite ethically dubious stories, but it stood out from other newspapers. And when the other newspapers were bought up by pro-China owners and their coverage became more and more formulaic, sometimes, you know, all of them would have the same front page, you know, which was an advert by the Hong Kong government, Apple Daily was the only one that would sort of report the news. So it really stood as a symbol of free speech, freedom of expression. So that's one reason why its disappearance has been so hard for Hong Kongers.
And so if it was the last pro-democracy newspaper in Hong Kong and it was this symbol, what does it mean for democracy that it's gone?
Well, we have seen the narrowing of space for pro-democracy forces in Hong Kong ever since the protests ended. But in particular, that move has really accelerated over the past year since the national security legislation came into force. The day after the national security legislation was passed, we began to see people being arrested for shouting slogans that people had been shouting for years. Then books began disappearing from library shelves. Last week, we saw someone who was taken away with a bag over his head after he held a protest flag out the window. And then just a couple of days ago, somebody else was arrested because he had a sticker saying "Liberate Hong Kong." And apparently his neighbor turned him in. So as one online publication put it, you know, it looks like the era of speech crime has come to Hong Kong.
Well, this conflict between pro-democracy advocates and Beijing goes back, obviously, further than this national security law from last year. In modern history, in 2014, there was a policy paper that used the term comprehensive jurisdiction. This came from Beijing, and it was used to describe the Chinese government's intentions for Hong Kong. And it was 2 years after President Xi came to power. How important was that document, and what did that phrase mean exactly, comprehensive jurisdiction?
I'd just like to go back to the framing of that question. You said a conflict between pro-democracy advocates. We're not talking about a conflict. We're talking about the ability of people to express themselves openly without being arrested. What we're seeing is a dramatic narrowing of freedoms, which is very, very punitive. Let's not forget that China signed an agreement with the United Kingdom called the Joint Declaration in 1984. And when Hong Kong went back to Chinese rule, the basic law, which China had at that point adopted as Hong Kong's mini constitution, said that Hong Kong's way of life should be allowed to continue unchanged until 2047 for 50 years. Now, what we're seeing is massive changes. The reason that we're seeing these is because China was so spooked by the huge demonstrations that broke out in 2019. And as you mentioned, the umbrella movement in 2014, when Hong Kongers occupied the streets. These have all sort of alarmed Beijing, and its playbook doesn't really allow for negotiation or compromise. It really only allows for suppression. And I think it sees Hong Kong's freedoms as inimical to its ability to continue in power.
To that point, I was really struck by your description recently in the Washington Post of the, you know, nearly invisible way that people in Hong Kong marked this year's anniversary of the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre with basically nothing when you compare it to the huge show of solidarity in the streets just a couple of years ago. How complete in the last couple of years has this crackdown on dissent been?
Well, if China had its way, it would be really quite overwhelming. But I think what Beijing hasn't really accounted for is the sort of stubbornness of Hong Kong people and their determination to show defiance, even in very small ways. So, for example, there was one quite famous shop where the owner is known for supporting democracy, and when that shop got into trouble, we saw these gigantic queues of Hong Kong people lining up to buy things at that shop in a show of support. And that's the reason why so many people came out to buy the last copy of Apple Daily. And, you know, people were getting up at midnight to stand in line for hours to get their hands on one final copy, because the methods of protest are now so limited.
And what has happened to the people who were protesting in the streets, or the lawmakers, the pro-democracy lawmakers?
Many of those pro-democracy lawmakers and very prominent activists who were protesting in the streets are now behind bars. Activists like Joshua Wong have been given jail sentences for illegal assembly, and that was for attending those protests, and often peaceful protests at that. And then we had the case of 47 other politicians and activists who are in the Democratic camp, the pan-democratic camp, as it's called, and they held primary polls to try and decide who would be election candidates. And under the national security legislation, those polls were considered a conspiracy against the government. And so many of them are behind bars awaiting trial on subversion charges. We've also seen quite a few people fleeing Hong Kong into exile. So, you know, a year later, what we've seen is that pro-democracy camp has basically been wiped out.
And so from the perspective of Beijing, that national security law has unfortunately worked.
Well, the national security law was a blunt instrument, and it has done what it was meant to do. But I think the thing is, they haven't yet finished. This is only the beginning. What we're seeing is a massive ideological campaign, which is really now only just starting. And that's basically reformatting all of Hong Kong society to put national security at the heart of everything. It is transforming Hong Kong society. It has transformed Hong Kong society. What the end point is, I don't think anybody really knows yet.
Do you think it's fair to say that the United States and other Western countries don't really know what to do about this?
I mean, I think I don't know whether they know what to do or not. What I would say is the actions that we have seen have, I don't think, been taken very seriously by China. What we're seeing is really a lot of kind of high-level hand-wringing, a lot of statements deploring this kind of action, but really not a lot of concrete actions. And I think that kind of response is enabling Beijing to move faster and faster. And so it's really, you know, opportunistically using this window to sort of, you know, roll up as many of Hong Kong's freedoms as it can.
Louisa Lim, a senior lecturer in journalism at the University of Melbourne and host of the Little Red podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you.